Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. It is the 25th anniversary of Monday Night Raw, and we are going to get into it. If you've been on social media, you have seen my meltdown that I had from the Manhattan Center in New York. David watched it from the comfort of his own St. Louis home. Not a suburb of St. Louis, Randy, but in St. Louis itself. But I'm here with David J. McCutcheon. Hi David, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, Kenny. I loved watching the 25th anniversary of Monday Night Raw. I was so ecstatic for you to be there in the Barclays Center.
The best analogy I can come up with, if this say Raw 25 was a wedding anniversary. It's okay. Like your wife promised to give you anal for the first time, but instead she shat in your face.
Well, I mean, isn't that the Brown anniversary? Can you
imagine? I can't. So we're going to talk all about it, break the whole thing down, analyze all the stuff, blah, 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 blah. But before we do, and this is going to be such a long episode, the banter's probably going to just kind of be in the episode during us.
I would reckon.
But before we do, we need to talk about the Enzo Amore situation. So it's interesting that it happened, or that it came out in the last 24 hours, because yesterday I was in Manhattan and we had some cool press stuff to do. So, which, by the way, if you like if you like our content on YouTube, which is insidetheropes.co, no, that's not. Fucking plus. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes. I rarely fuck that up.
I'll tell you why, folks. He's still drunk from last night drowning his sorrows after spending all that money to be in the Manhattan Center.
Accurate. I woke up this morning and couldn't remember the show for about 5 minutes.
Well, I mean,
bless.
To be fair, it may have been better that way.
So we were doing all this press, which, by the way, coming to our YouTube channel in the next few days will be interviews with The Hardys, Stephanie McMahon, Roman Reigns, The Club, Sheamus and Cesaro, Mark Henry, Dana Warrior. Ton of interviews coming up, so do check them out. But anyway, we were going to the Manhattan Center yesterday, and as we're on the way down, this Chinese woman and guy come up to us, and the guy has a camera, and she's from CBC. In China, which I believe is their, like, I'm trying to get with it, China Broadcast Capital, I think it's called.
Okay.
No, I don't know if that's, I've googled CBC, then I couldn't find it. But basically, she had a microphone that said CBC, or maybe it's a Canada-China thing. Anyway, she had mentioned China in the conversation to us.
Sure.
But anyway.
Also, the lovely sounds of New York City behind you, people dying, ambulances going out.
Yep.
You can hear it all. It's great.
I can't.
The ambiance of New York City.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm almost happier hearing those sirens than the sirens in the Manhattan Center, but we'll get to it. My God, that is a long siren. Anyway, that's what she said. So this woman comes up and we're kind of, you know, chatting, and she says, "Oh, do you have a minute to talk?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And before I kind of knew it, there was a microphone in my face and I'm being filmed. And she said, "I'd just like to ask you about the Time's Up and Me Too movement." I said, "Okay, sure, no problem." And she said, "You know, what do you think about it? And I said, "Well, I think it's great that people are speaking up, and you know, that people who have done this kind of thing are finally being held accountable for it, and, you know, there can be charges pressed against them, blah, 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 blah." And she said, "Now, don't you think it's unfair that people are losing their careers because of this?" And I was like, "Well, you'd have to mention a specific situation, because if someone did sexually harass someone, then I don't feel in a position of power, then I obviously do not feel sorry for that they are no longer in that job." But, so she did this weird thing, which it was almost like she was trying to get me to say something bad.
And she
was like, "So, you know, you think that's fair, though, if someone's had a job for 20 years and they've lost it?" And I said, "I don't particularly think they are the people that should be focused on." I said, "I do think that, you know, there is the innocent still proven guilty thing that we should, you know, look at, etc. But I think that, you know, people shouldn't be dismissed for coming forward, etc., etc." And she kept trying to get me to say something bad, and I was like, why is this woman doing this to me? Why is she... And she, and then, so she finally, towards the end, she's kind of like, you know, I can't remember the last one what she said, but she then turned to Ollie, who was with me, and said, you know, what do you think? And he just said, I echo everything my friend said, and just didn't say anything else. And then they filmed us walking away. So somewhere, apparently, I might be in a news show, but maybe what I said wasn't salacious enough. But she did say to me at the end, when she cut the camera, she was like, thank you very much, you're a gentleman. Oh, no, she said, it's, where are you from? I said, Scotland. She said, ah, Scotland. Do they still respect women there? I said, yeah, as I'm hoping they do in the majority of the world, if not all. You know, it's like, you would hope that happens. I mean, sadly, it doesn't happen everywhere, but you'd hope that it happens everywhere.
In a post-Trump world, these are the questions we have to ask.
Yeah, and then about an hour later, when we go back to the hotel, the Enzo story's broken. Now, I'll be honest with you, I've not read all about it, mainly because yesterday I was very busy, and today's been kind of formulating all my thoughts for this podcast. So, can you fill me in on what the rough story is so far?
Well, I've been trying to piece it all together to see exactly when the police report was filed and when the investigation began. According to Brian Alvarez, apparently the investigation was started pretty much immediately following. I don't know if that's following the events, I think it is, or following her coming forward. If it's following the events, I think that that's pretty good in her favor for this, because, you know, it's always good to be on top of things. A lot of people always want to go, well, you know, innocent until proven guilty. The problem with innocent until proven guilty in a lot of cases like this is that there is no proof to be had, or the events happened so long ago. And let's be perfectly honest, I'm pretty anti-police. Throughout my life, I've had guns put literally in my face, and a cop told me once that he should just pull the trigger so he wouldn't have to arrest me in 10 years when I was 8 years old. So I think very negatively of the police in general, Kenny, and that'll be one for the autobiography. But so I'm not the best person whenever it comes to the Blue Lives Matter thing. However, I do, because of my street experience, I do understand that the police will be very dismissive to women who will call in for these things. Oh, you had it coming. You were inebriated. You dressed like a slut, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is just par for the course when it comes to cops and women. So I understand fully why women feel uncomfortable calling the police, and especially whenever male officers arrive, because chances are they're going to take the side of the perpetrator or the accused, as it were. So I completely get it. That said, it does always look better to the general public whenever a police investigation begins immediately thereafter from the claims. There's no real way to prove this clear cut one way or the other. We know how Enzo is, but I think that's an unfair assumption to see him on television and see his character and know what we know about him and just automatically assume he's a rapist. Likewise, on the flip side of that, the woman who is accusing him has had vlogs about faking pregnancies on YouTube. And a lot of her detractors are pointing to that, saying that she's a fraud and a phony and she's seeking money because of that. I also think that you can't hold something like that against someone due to that, because that's more of a revelation and things of that nature, something to cleanse the spirit and possibly help others who are coping with things like that. Life is very tricky and it's very finicky, and she may be a liar. That very well may be the case. She lied about the pregnancy and everything else. But then that becomes a focal point of, just because someone is lying about X, does that mean that they are lying about Y? And I don't think that you can jump to conclusions there either. Just because someone is a liar or a shitty person, it doesn't mean that they can't be a victim of sexual assault or anything of the sort. So those two ideas are not exclusive. And just because you are a bad person doesn't mean that you deserve really horrible things to happen to you. So that's something I think a lot of times, especially in our society, with how we get caught up in throwing people under the bus and everything, and just a lack of empathy on all sides of the coin. We just kind of lost touch with humanity, and I think we need to start getting a little bit of understanding. And just because someone can lie about one thing doesn't automatically mean that they'll lie about another, or that they deserve bad things to happen to them, or anything of the sort. So as of right now, police are investigating. The WWE has officially released Enzo Amore.
Did I read that part of the reason that he's been released is because he's known about these allegations for a while and not spoken up?
That seems to be the case.
It's always really tough to talk about this kind of stuff, and we're only doing it because if we don't, people will be like, why are you not talking about it?
You have to address the elephant in the room.
But the thing is, you know, there's two schools of thought. There's a thought of, well, you know, he didn't talk about it, therefore he's hiding something. But the other part could be, well, if he didn't do it, he doesn't...
Why would he shine the light on it?
Yeah, because the thing there's totally two sides to it. First of all, anyone who comes forward saying, you know, they've been accused of something should absolutely be taken seriously, you should investigate it, but there is that thing of, if you... sexual assault is one of those ones that if you're ever accused of that, you can't wash that away.
Yeah.
Even if you haven't done it.
Yeah, it is a stigma that you won't be able to cleanse yourself of.
What I would say, and this is that, you know, this comes back to any sort of like accusation based stuff, whether it's Enzo Amore or Adam Blompé or whoever it is. The main thing to do is just don't ever put for people who, and I don't know about either of them, so I'm not gonna even get into it, but. I think that you have to be very careful about what situations you put yourself in, as a man, in the sense of, like, you don't want to put yourself in situations that could be misconstrued, but at the same time, just treat people well. Just treat people nicely. No means no, ladies and gentlemen, and that goes across the board. Yeah. If they don't want to pump you, they don't want to pump you. Live with it. Move on.
Something that was really good with my mom, with how she raised me, was if I, you know how some people, they go, go and give your auntie a kiss and this and that. My mom would be like, if you don't want to kiss a motherfucker, just tell them to go fuck themselves.
That was a good motto. Good motto.
Yeah. Exactly. My mother taught me from a young age about consent and boundaries. Now, that said, I will hug a motherfucker whenever I see them. So... for anybody who is anti-hugging, who is looking forward to meeting me in New Orleans, please preface that whenever you approach me, man or woman. I am a hugger. I am Bailey. I am a hugger. I will automatically go in for the hug. And so if you do not want me to do that, please extend your hand and say no hugs, please, whenever you are greeting me, because that is my default thing. It has nothing to do with any type of assault or invading your personal space. It's just something that, out of the kindness of my nature, it's how I was raised, and you greet everyone with a hug and a smile. So,
but the Enzo thing is, it's being investigated, and, you know, once the police reports have come out and, you know, journalists like Dave Meltzer and other people have been able to get more information on it, then I guess you can glean more from what's going on. But for now, it's been investigated. He has been released. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with the Cruiserweight title. The match is...
A lot of people are recommending a Battle Royal at the Royal Rumble, and I'm like, fuck no, we're not having a third Royal Rumble at the Royal Rumble.
Who would care? I mean, trust me.
No one.
The Cruiserweights, I didn't care about them last night.
Yeah.
Oh, great, I paid $400 to see Lince Dorado. Tremendous.
Yeah.
Right. The sad thing for the division is that I think Enzo was a big part of it, to the point that I think the division is going to struggle without him.
I feel really bad in terms of, I mean, obviously, you know, you feel bad for the people involved, but in terms of the periphery, I feel really bad for Cedric Alexander, who was probably going to win the title at the Rumble. That was probably going to happen.
Worst decision on planet Earth, but yeah.
They would have done it, though. And I feel bad for him, because that would have been his time to shine. And, you know, this Cruiserweight division, it's snake bit, Kenny. You got a guy who beat his wife, who ended up missing out on the main event spot because of the repercussions for being a complete and utter dickhead. And then you have this. So this has taken the other guy from the main event.
I do want to try and. So this is the other thing that somebody on Twitter, his name is Ewan, and he sent a tweet, and he was trying to be funny. And I'm just
it's no fault of his. We don't want to gang up on him.
No. Like, I want to defend him because he sent a tweet which I did chuckle at. Because I got what he was trying to do.
Right.
Because I was talking with the Manhattan Center and he said, does it help you to know that Enzo's been released? You know, kind of like, at least you don't need to watch him anymore.
Right.
And then I retweeted it, and in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have retweeted it, but I retweeted it basically to say, look, I know what you're saying, please don't say this the wrong way, but I can't say anything positive about this whole situation, so I'm just not going to get involved. And then somebody had kind of, you know, said something to him, and I was kind of like, the problem for me is that because, ridiculous as it sounds, because so many people do look at my Twitter now and then, if I say anything that can even be misconstrued as something, you know, I'm just gonna get, you know, ganged up on for ages. So,
right.
But and then some people were saying, you know, the whole normalizing the cult. The problem with entertainment is that when you can't, like, be okay with somebody having done something wrong because you like them.
Yeah.
But what I will say is, if you're one of these people who is, you know, you're the social justice warrior in some ways, what I do want to say is, for me, those people, you either need to be across the board or not. I'm not a kind of social justice person because, right, name five really famous American WWF, WWE wrestlers. Any five.
Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Randy Savage, Andre the Giant, John Cena, and Ric Flair.
Okay, so Ric Flair has left numerous people and companies without money that he owed them, causing several to go bankrupt.
Uh-huh, and he also flashed his dick at everybody without their consent.
Yep, he's been sued by airline stewardesses for forcing himself on them. Uh-huh. Macho Man Randy Savage was involved in a fight with his girlfriend at the time, and Road Warrior Hawk and his wife in 1996, and at one point, I believe Savage did strike the woman.
And also he was emotionally abusive to Elizabeth. He would keep her locked in rooms, and just so other men couldn't look at her.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then who were the other ones you mentioned, sorry?
Hulk Hogan.
Well, he's perfect. No, so, well, we all know that one. We don't need to draw. So the point is, I don't...
Andre the Giant, by the way, who I also mentioned, used to call Kamala the N-word constantly, to the point that Kamala had to purchase a gun and point it, the loaded gun, at Andre the Giant and force him to stop saying the N-word and apologize.
So, like, for me, I don't tend to just, you know, come down on people and just be like, you know, everybody who's ever done anything wrong should be persecuted for the rest of their life. Because to me, if you do that, you need to do it to everybody, and then you would just never live.
I agree.
You would never be able to live.
You would never have any entertainment left at that point. But there are varying measures. Obviously, Chris Benoit murders his entire family, and, you know, we go, oh boy, all right, sweep him away now. And
but also that's like, so somebody had messaged us about the Shawn Michaels shows and said, why didn't you bring up Montreal and Benoit? And I'm like, what else do you want me to ask about Montreal? And also...
Right.
Somebody in a meet and greet had asked Sean about Benoit. And said, you know, what do you think of Benoit? And Sean's response was, well, that's like asking me what I think about Hitler. Or, and he mentioned a couple, like, you know, people who'd done terrible things. He was like, what do you want me to say? And it's like, I get that some people, and that you, if you like it, it's fine. Like, if you can still watch Benoit, I can still watch some of his matches and enjoy them. Yeah. So, if you can, you can. If you can't, you can. It's your own call. It doesn't make you a bad person.
Right.
But
right.
My favorite tweet from today was by Vacant on Twitter, at WWE Vacant, who says, now you all see why I dropped the US title as early as I did. My services are needed on 205 Live as the new Cruiserweight champion. And right before that, he wrote, sorry to those of you expecting more from last night's Raw, including a cameo from yours truly. However, as noted, I'm training harder than ever heading to the Royal Rumble, as the office says I need to get my weight down to 205 before the event.
God, I know a lot of guys really struggle with cutting weight. I just hope that Vacant can get there without any health issues.
I'm praying for the guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was what, like about 265?
Have you seen his Twitter bio? His Twitter bio says, former 13-time WWE champion, have beaten the likes of Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, HBK, John Cena, and Daniel Bryan. What a just the best.
So good.
So, before we talk about Raw, because we're going to get into that in a second, I want to ask you, you were at the Raw 1000 show in 2012.
Yeah, I was. So, can you just talk... St. Louis, Missouri.
Talk a little bit about, you know, before getting into this show, talk about being at Raw 1000. What was the vibe? What was the atmosphere? What were the good things? What were the bad things? And overall, what did you make of that as an anniversary show?
Something that I loved about Raw 1000 is they packed all the nostalgia in one segment just about. You know, you had it sprinkled here and there, but the thing with Heath Slater and all the legends coming down and hitting all their finishes and whatnot, the Brothers of Destruction reuniting, that was really awesome. Really enjoyed that. And that was the last time we've actually seen the Brothers of Destruction together.
I'm gonna correct you there with my knowledge.
It
was so bad that the end of 2015 Brothers of Destruction versus Wyatt's has been erased from your mind.
Oh, holy shit! It sure has, man. Oh man.
Listen. I understand. I tried to erase it as well.
Yeah. There's no doubt. But and of course, CM Punk turning heel on The Rock was the big takeaway from that. So basically, you had your nostalgia, and you also had the biggest pivotal moment of the year in terms of storytelling happen on that show. So you got both of column A and column B to move the company forward while also looking backwards and appreciating what happened in the past.
And then, I mean, so... going into this one, do you think that part of the reason why Raw 25 maybe, like, was it just a battle that you couldn't win? Because it was a go-home show for the Rumble. So...
which is problematic timing.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe that's part of the problem. But overall, Raw 1000, you thought was a good show? Happy with it?
Oh, I loved it. It was one of my favorite wrestling shows I've ever attended because it ticked all the boxes that I needed it to.
So, we're going to be talking about this from very different perspectives.
Wait a second. Raw 1000, Raw 1000 or Raw 25?
Raw 25. I loved Raw 1000. I thought Raw 1000 was great.
Okay. For Raw 25, it ticked some of the boxes I needed it to.
So, and it's funny, I can't remember if I told this in the podcast, but I remember for Raw 1000, I was living in London, and I didn't have internet in my house yet, so I didn't watch Raw Live, obviously, because I didn't have the internet, but I went into work at, like, 6:30 in the morning, and people who know me know how much I hate mornings, so I got into work for 6:30, sat and watched the whole show, and as Punk turned heel at, like, 8:45 in the morning, everybody walked out of work, and I was just, like, very happy, because it was just a great show, from DX reuniting, from the AJ Daniel Bryan wedding with Slick, that turned into The Rock and Punk and Bryan, and, you know, like you said, the legend stuff, and it was great, really good fun. So, Raw 25, it was going to be from the Manhattan Center and the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. WWE did a lot, they were all over New York yesterday. The Empire State Building was lit up in red to celebrate 25 years of Raw. That was really cool.
So
we were doing press for most of the day, and then we were ready to go to the Manhattan Center. Now, we got a backstage tour earlier in the day where we weren't allowed to film it, which was basically us seeing the set. And it looked, I mean, I think the one thing I can say with positivity is they nailed the Manhattan Center set. What did you think of the set of the Manhattan Center?
Oh, it was perfect. You had the Ico Pro banner. The only thing it needed was the legitimate rainbow entranceway. I know that they did the LED board and they kind of did that up. But, I mean, hell, you only had two matches and the guys coming out didn't even really get that proper LED board thing. I mean, Bray Wyatt came out to pure blackness and half of the LED board was messed up.
Yeah, it was also some things you might not have seen in TV was at the monitor section they had digital monitors placed inside like a casing that made it look like they had the old school monitor.
So good.
With like a WWF logo on it, and like they said they don't make those monitors anymore. So
man,
they couldn't, you know, that they had to improvise. And they had the Ico Pro sign, which was just phenomenal.
Really good touch there. Yeah. Big pop.
So they had some cool retro merch. They had so we ended up walking up the stairs to the now we're walking up the stairs, and this is a sign of things to come. We're waiting for the lift, because if you or sorry, the elevator for our American friends, but like
you're in America, get it right.
Do you not speak American? It's English, you fucker. So we were standing like so when you walk into the Manhattan Center, it's the 7th floor where the Manhattan Center ballroom is. So it's seven floors up. But there was like such a big queue for the elevators that we just were like, oh, we'll just go and walk. And as I start walking up the stairs, I look over, and in this whole sea of people is Akira Tozawa and Hideo Itami waiting on the lift.
Oh my God, you gotta be kidding me.
Nope, I swear to God. And I thought, if that doesn't tell you about 205 Live, I don't know what does. Akira Tozawa and Hideo Itami waiting in the queue for a lift with the fans.
God. Ugh. What can you say? What can you say?
Now they probably were going backstage. So I'm not trying to say that they were like, you know, sitting in the stands or anything.
Obviously, yeah.
I actually think Akira Tozawa was in one of the cruiserweight matches that would be later on. But anyway, so we get in the Manhattan Center. We find out when we get there that we're getting commemorative chairs to take home, which is amazing.
Oh, that's great. Oh, dude. So I saw the chairs, too. You actually got one?
Mm-hmm. Everybody got one.
That's good, at least.
Yeah, so that's good. So basically, I paid $475 for the ticket.
Well, that's what I paid. Let me look to see what the chairs are going for on eBay while you talk.
So I mean, say a chair cost kind of values $200. You know, we still paid $275 on top, and we're on the balcony, and so we get in, and it looks great, and then Lawler's in his old school, you know, jacket, and it's just the whole thing's great, and then there's a guy dressed up as Bobby Heenan in drag. He's got the whole thing on. So I ended up going down and getting a photo with him.
The chairs go for about $250, Kenny.
There you go. We're trying to figure out how we're going to get ours home. But
we'll
figure it out.
I can imagine.
Last night, I was close to flinging that thing somewhere. But never do things in the heat of the moment, people. So anyway, so we were in there. It looked great. We went to the bar, got ourselves a couple of double vodkas and Red Bull. Sugar-free, of course, you know. And we start watching the show, and we're very, very excited. And I remember turning to Ollie, and I must have set myself up for it, because I turned and I said, I don't think I've ever been more excited for a wrestling show than this. I'm more excited
with this. Kenny, this is why our experiences were so much different. I had very tempered expectations, and yours were through the roof.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm more excited at this than WrestleMania and da 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 da. Because what I thought was going to happen going in was it would be kind of an equal thing. Half the stuff would be in the Manhattan Center, half would be in the Barclays Center. So,
right.
Now I have rewatched it today to try and not just have the angry Manhattan Center experience. But, the issue is, you know, some people are saying, I know somebody on the Facebook community was saying, you know, people need to just, you know, accept accept that a show might not be as good as they think it is. And it's like, if that's how you consume entertainment, it's not a good way to do it. Like, it's, you know, if a show is bad, you know, it's a 3-hour show. There was a combined time of maybe 25 minutes of stuff in the Manhattan Center, and then 2.5 hours at the Barclays Center. So it was very, very different. So we get there. We're all good to go. Now, at the beginning of the show, they do the sirens and stuff and all that. We didn't have any of that noise.
Oh, really? The presentation at home was pretty good for that.
And but, you know, people are going mental, they're going crazy, and it would be 54 minutes into the program. Like, live. Not, like, if you're watching live. 54 minutes before we got one thing.
Oh, man.
So, but it... they kind of were getting away with it because it was kind of, well, you know, when we get something, it's going to be great.
When you get it, it's going to be good. That was exactly what I was thinking the entire time whenever I was sitting there, because I was also kind of timing it out a bit, mm-hmm. thinking, all right, when's Kenny going to find something fun?
And, like, but there was a great vibe. There was people chatting ECW, Bobby Heenan. even before the show, there was Fuck You, Barclays, which would become more visceral later on in the evening.
Yes, so, yeah, I can imagine.
But, yeah, so basically, you pay $475 for these seats because they sold it in 5 seconds. The only way to get them was on a StubHub. And, yeah, so, I mean, somebody did, I think I made the shit list on Twitter because somebody had said, I'm so happy they put all the smarks in one room and trapped them with nothing to do, and then mentioned Frank the Clown, the guy with the jacket, and me.
Oh, that's rude. You're Frank the Clown is much more endearing than you, Kenny.
I'm saying nothing, absolutely nothing. So anyway, so that was kind of. Have you got anything else you want to ask me before we start the show? Anything you want to ask me, being a Manhattan Center, and you want to know about it?
How big is Batista's dick?
I did look. I think it's about 14 inches.
Oh! That, you know what we call that? Half of a two-cold Scorpio.
I mean, see, if you were to say to me, what things do you want to see in the world? Flash Funk's dick is not one of them. Ever.
I mean, better than Todd Gordon's dick.
Yeah. I'm not going there. So let's talk about the show, see how we got on. We've got tons and tons of questions from people, so we'll get to them later on. I'll try and remember exactly what was happening in the Manhattan set. So from when the start of the show happened and JR and King did their bit to camera to when The Undertaker came out, there was nothing going on in the Manhattan Center. It was just watching the big screen.
Just waiting in anticipation for The Undertaker to come out and get attacked by John Cena.
That's all I wanted! Yeah. So, okay, so let's talk about it. So they've got it from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn and Manhattan Center in New York. JR and King check in from the Manhattan Center, and then they turn it over to Michael Cole, Cody Graves, and Booker T in Barclays. They open the show with Stephanie and Shane in the ring. They welcome people to the show. They then show that kind of intro video that's been about for the last couple of days.
Sure.
Then they introduce Vince. He comes out. My favorite tweet, and I'm guilty of it as well, so I'm not even trying to say that I'm not, you know, I'm any better than it. But Brian Alvarez tweeted out, let me find it here. Sorry for this. It was awesome and heartwarming to see all those people who boo the hell out of Roman Reigns every week and hijack the shows cheer like crazy when Vince McMahon came out, gave him a standing ovation, bowed to him, sang his song, and chanted, thank you, Vince.
I actually retweeted that. I love Brian. Brian's a funny guy.
He's very funny, very funny. So we kick off with them introducing Vince. I loved it on commentary. Cole said, you know, on January the 11th, 1993, it was Vince McMahon, Randy Savage, and Rob Bartlett that welcomed viewers. The Rob Bartlett mention was in there straight away. So Vince comes in, thank you Vince chant, he says he's going to smell the roses. Then Stephanie and Shane say that they started a GoFundMe for him.
Yes.
Do you know what I'll say? I thought Stephanie was really good here. I thought she was,
yeah.
I thought that
yeah,
she yeah. was she was what she needed to be. So fair play on that one. So Vince then starts mocking the plaque that he gets, and says, you know, the only plaque that is the plaque in all of your teeth.
And arteries, don't forget that, and because I can also relate to that.
And then the plaque that's clogging your arteries, and he says, you know, I did this all by myself, there's no one else to thank, I didn't need anyone but me, there's not a person in the world that's ever helped me. And the glass breaks and Stone Cold Steve Austin comes out. I don't know if everybody else was as excited as we were to see he was not wearing white trainers, aka sneakers, if you guys call them over.
Yeah.
He was wearing black shoes. He looked phenomenal. He looked like he could go if he wanted to. He really did. He comes out, does his poses. Vince says, you know, I'm a senior citizen now. I've got arthritis. I'm a member of the AARP. I've got a heart murmur. I live in a retirement community. Just excellent Vince stuff. really strong. And then he says, but Shane's in his prime. Just throws Shane to the wolves. Stephanie had the sense to get out of the ring by this point. Austin shakes Shane's hands, holds it up, hits a stunner on him. Vince says, I don't blame you. You had it coming. I think Sondra was probably just like loving life at this point because she got to see Stone Cold beating up Shane.
Then
Vince and Austin toast, and then they hug a couple of times, but then of course Austin...
It's all very awkward, of course.
Of course it is. But in the end, he drops him with a stunner, then Shane gets up, toasts Austin, another stunner, and that's the opening segment with Stone Cold Steve Austin, Vince, Shane and Stephanie. I thought this was 10 out of 10, excellent. It was like a really great piece of nostalgia pie. Like, if you've been dieting for, like, a month and you go... It's like, you know, David, you eat more healthy now because you have to.
Yeah.
But when you get that... When you're clamoring for that pizza that you really want and then you get the pizza and it's just really great, that's what this was, I thought. So,
Kenny, do you want to know what I was doing during this segment?
Oh, did you have a pizza party?
I was shoving Domino's jalapeno pizza directly into my stupid gullet, and it was amazing. And just imagine taking in this wonderful product that they were presenting while eating pizza. That was exactly how I was feeling.
Doesn't get any better than that.
No, it really doesn't. This was tremendous. I really enjoyed it. It was great, though, because whenever Vince came out, you know, he was cutting the babyface promo. Val turns to me and goes, he's going to turn heel and Austin's going to stun him. And I just turned to her and, like, it didn't even dawn on me. It should have, because I knew Austin was there.
It only dawned on me when Vince had the plaque. Like, when he got the plaque, it was like, where's this going? And
yeah,
then,
yeah,
but, yeah. It was, I mean, I know some people have been complaining about, I know you'd said it to me on Facebook and DM, not complaining, but you were kind of saying, it'd have been great if Austin could have talked. But,
I love Austin talking. So I love that.
I think this was the best use of him. This was exactly what he needed to be doing, you know? 100%.
Yeah.
There was no reason for him to do anything else, and it was just a great hot open to the show.
It was just perfect. It was literally everything that I wanted it to be. So this was the first of several times that Val was correct throughout the show, and unfortunately it all went down from here with her predictions.
So we were cheering in the Manhattan Center for it. Now, you noticed throughout the night, they would pan, when things happened in the Manhattan Center, they would pan back to Barclays, but we were not good enough for that.
Of course not.
No. So, we get hyped up that, you know, we've got the return of The Undertaker, the Intercontinental title match with The Miz and Roman Reigns. So then we get Asuka, Bayley, Sasha Banks, and Mickie James against Nia Jax, Alicia Fox, Sonya Deville, and Mandy Rose. Paige is at ringside. They have like a 12-minute match. Now, again, it's like we're in the building, we're going, oh, okay, there's a match, so we must be getting whatever's next. But that's, we're getting the next thing. And we would, but this match would go on like 12 minutes, goes through two ad breaks. So really, it's about 20 minutes all in. And Asuka's team win, but then as they're all celebrating, Asuka ends up just shoving Mickie James off the middle rope onto the floor. When Bayley approaches her, she hits her with a spinning kick, spinning fist. And then Asuka does the kick to Sasha Banks, and Asuka ends up kind of tossing Sasha Banks over the top rope, and I guess kind of just asserting her dominance on the Raw brand. I thought the match was generic as generic could be, but I thought that the post-match angle with Asuka was really good fun.
Yeah, it was about as basic as it comes. Me and Val were rolling our eyes at this. This was just we have to cram all of the women onto this show, and also it's the go-home show, so we have to remind you that this will be exactly what it's like whenever all these women step into the first ever Women's Royal Rumble match. You got to say match, otherwise you might confuse it with the event, as if there's two separate events, because wrestling fans are dumb. So this is... it's pretty obvious Asuka's not winning the Royal Rumble now, right? Go home show, she fucking dominates literally everyone in existence, so
it's funny
kind
because
of obvious.
It's funny that 20 years ago, Sondra and I are watching it. The go home show for the 1998 Royal Rumble, Steve Austin basically killed everybody.
Yeah.
So, it's funny, I was talking to somebody who I won't name, but they are a wrestler. and we were talking about Ronda Rousey, and they said, you know, I don't want Ronda Rousey to win the Royal Rumble. I think it should be a wrestler, and da 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 da. And I said, I get that, but I said, you know, don't you understand how good that would be for the women's division? Because Ronda Rousey's not going to be a part of generic six women tags. That's not going to be what she's signing up for. So her being involved automatically raises the profile of stuff. And if she can have three matches a year, four matches a year, and elevate some people, then I'm all for it. So I'm okay with it. How do you feel about Ronda Rousey getting involved? I mean, it's the first time really there's ever been a female celebrity match. Am I getting that wrong? Is there anybody you can think of? I can't remember any.
No, I mean, you know, you had like Cyndi Lauper involved in matches, but in terms of just like a straight out female presentation, no, I believe this would be the first.
So, what do you think, Ronda Rousey?
In WWE, I should say. I'm pretty sure like Jenna Jameson got involved in ECW and stuff, but regardless.
But what do you think about Ronda Rousey? Would you like to see her in the Rumble? What would her being in the women's division for WWE do for you as a fan?
If I were fantasy booking this and people are going to get so pissed, I don't give a fuck. I would have Ronda Rousey come in and eliminate Asuka in the Royal Rumble. And I would
have... This is a U-turn here for the McCutch.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
This is the heel turn, as it were. Ronda coming in and eliminating Asuka in a fray while Asuka's fighting someone else. Just, you know, not a flat out elimination, but a sneaky elimination. Ronda's going to be a heel in WWE. She has to be, because the fans they're all smarks. They don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Also, Asuka has got this thing that I don't know if anybody else has ever had with me, where she could kill you, but I think she's the cutest thing in the world.
Like, in terms
of like her character, like anybody who's not seen it, please watch the promo with her and The Miz for Mixed Match Challenge. It is the best.
Perfect. She can turn it on a dime too. But yeah, I think that Ronda eliminating Asuka in a fray, not to where it's like, oh, she beats her up and then tosses her over, but more like, oh, she dunks her out while something else is going on. I think that that is a good utilization of heat, and have the final two come down to Nia Jax and Ronda Rousey, and Ronda Rousey eliminate Nia Jax. And then the next month, you have Alexa Bliss versus Asuka, and put the title on Asuka. That way we get Asuka and Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania.
Well, it's funny because Dave Meltzer actually spoke about, you know, because we I think you and Sondra had talked about it last week or the week before, but, you know, they've not mentioned anything about Asuka had beaten Alexa Bliss, so doesn't she get a title shot? But they don't want to put that in your head yet.
Not yet, no. So... No, it's still early. Everybody wants this instant gratification. I saw this yesterday because, like, I like this show. I did, and I'm in the minority. And everybody's just all like, well, they didn't follow up on this, that, and the other, and bam, bam,
bam. I actually thought the strongest thing about the show was that they managed to have, I thought, decent build or attempts at build for the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to juggle. I think a lot of people sitting on the sofa and fantasy booking this, they don't realize how difficult it is to juggle the nostalgia and... Because, I mean, it is the 25th anniversary. That's a big one. It's not like, oh, it's the 15th anniversary and blah, blah, blah. 25 is a big anniversary, Kenny. So it's not like they could just sort of dismiss it and just go straight to the Rumble build. They had to kind of juggle between nostalgia and building to the Rumble. And I think that they did an okay job of it. It wasn't great, but they did what they had to. Now, the main event segment, but we'll get to that. But overall, they did what they had to and this and that. But we'll micro-analyze everything as it comes, I guess. But yeah, that's what I would do with the women's division with Ronda Rousey. Because she's a star, Kenny. I'm sorry, everybody. Well, she doesn't deserve it. Brian Alvarez had a great line on Wrestling Observer. What is with this "we deserve it" bullshit? Like what? They've been in the company a while? What? Alicia Fox should be the world champion because she's been hired for 10 years for running? No, that isn't how it works.
But
we have stars and we have periphery athletes. And some people are stars. Ronda Rousey is a star. If you don't like that, then too bad. Be a bigger star than she is if you want to unseat her.
Well, I mean,
suck it.
I think Ronda Rousey in WWE is great. I really want to see it because what I always talk about liking stories and things that feel important, and she would be hit both of those boxes. Also, I can't wait to hear the same people that complain about Brock Lesnar's title run being, oh my god, Ronda Rousey is the women's champion, is the greatest thing ever. Oh, you mean the part-time UFC fighter that comes in and elevates people when they have big-time matches? Okay, good. Just so we're clear.
So
I think that, you know, we've talked, you know, so many times about the, you know, Bayley and Sasha Banks and how they don't really feel as important as we'd like them to. And I think that, coupled with, you know, not really, a lot of people not maybe knowing who the other horsewomen are. Also, Shayna Baszler is killing it on NXT right now. So,
yeah.
I think Asuka Ronda is better than Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen.
I completely agree. This cataclysm is electric right now. I'm looking forward to it.
And also, see if it comes down to it, that Asuka's first loss in WWE that's taken, what, 2 years, is to the baddest motherfucker woman on the planet. In Ronda Rousey, I'm okay with that.
Let's back up here. I don't think that Ronda Rousey would win at WrestleMania. I think that Asuka would win.
I think Asuka. But what I'm saying is, if they decided to go that route, I'm okay with that because.
You mean with Asuka losing the Rumble? I don't think that they'll even count that as a loss. WWE, and they can do whatever they want.
I'm talking about if Asuka's first pinfall or submission defeat is to Ronda Rousey.
Oh, okay. A hypothetical.
Yeah, just a hypothetical. Because then it's like, I buy that.
Yeah.
I buy that that's like, she went through everyone, but then she had to take on an MMA fighter. And that was new ground for her. And then you can build the comeback story for Asuka. For Asuka to get the win.
So, something that I love too is all these, of course it's fucking men. Just, the worst fucking human beings on the planet. Just these fucking men. Max, bro. Bro, they're fucking Max. All these men who go out and go, oh, Ronda Rousey's a loser, blah, blah, blah. Ronda Rousey would fucking rip your dick off and throw it in a sewer drain. Shut the fuck up. Jesus Christ.
But I do think...
She didn't even lose any of her luster, Kenny. People are still fucking talking about her, aren't they?
It's true. Well, yeah, it's funny because, you know, there's kind of like a little inside the ropes interest in this story. Because in 2016... when Paul Heyman was over, he talked about the end of the streak with The Undertaker. And then when Bill Goldberg was over in 2017, he talked about losing the streak to Kevin Nash. And a lot of people in wrestling will say winning streaks could be the kiss of death. Because how do you end them? I think it should be Ronda Rousey. I want it to be Ronda Rousey that beats Asuka. Not necessarily at WrestleMania. But at some point, I want that to be the person because I don't know if my heart can handle an Alexa Bliss roll-up being the way that it ends.
No, no, no. You know what I would actually do, Kenny? I would have Asuka's first loss be at SummerSlam to Shayna Baszler.
Well, that's good. That is good.
Yeah.
Like just Ronda training Baszler, then
Ronda trying to get her revenge on Asuka, and she just can't do it. And then the follow-up is she gets Shayna to do it.
Yeah, no, Shayna Baszler's, in the Mae Young Classic, one of my favourite things was, I think it was the first round match that Shayna Baszler had, and Shayna up for a suplex, and then when she was coming down, she applied that submission.
Yeah.
And
it looked
great.
Nutty stuff, yeah. Some people are just naturals in the ring, and everybody wants to throw Ronda under the bus. We haven't even fucking seen her wrestle yet. Jesus Christ, people.
But you just know it's going to be good.
These are the same people who thought that the Jason Jordan experiment was a failure 10 days in, and now Jason Jordan is the most over heel on Raw.
We'll get to him. He's so good.
What a bunch of fucking idiots.
He's so good. But I think Ronda's going to do great. I'm all in on Asuka Ronda and where that'll go. So we're just so you're keeping count, folks. Still nothing yet at the Manhattan Center. So, Kurt Angle's backstage telling a referee that he couldn't afford to have another incident when Brock and Braun and Kane are in the same ring later. Then Coach comes in, hugs Angle. Harvey Whippleman and the Brooklyn Brawler come in. Teddy Long, Brother Love, Big Pop, and the Boogeyman come in. And they all have a bit of a comedy segment, which ends with the Boogeyman putting worms onto Coachman's hand. This was fine. It was harmless. I just didn't need, like, five of these. Like...
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you exactly what I would have cut out whenever we get to it.
Okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm very happy that JBL was in a backstage segment where he couldn't kill somebody with a clothesline. So I'll take that loss. But so anyway, so we then cut to finally the Manhattan Center. And JR and King do a little piece to camera. They cut to that excellent video package on Undertaker's history on Raw. And Undertaker comes out.
Have you ever noticed, though, that they use the same exact song in, like, all of these video packages? Like, if you compare every video package that the WWE does, it all sounds like it comes from the same album.
yeah, it's true. Well, I'm the worst guy ever because, the intro video they had, and it was the Fallout Boy song?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm the guy who goes, oh, that's a great song. Oh, that's great. Because I automatically associate it with the clips that are on it. So, like, yeah, I'm the guy that has, like, you know, two Evanescence songs because they were used for pay-per-views in 2003.
By the way, I had a great Twitter joke, and I'm going to throw it over to you, okay? Mm-hmm. Toxic masculinity sounds like a pay-per-view from WWF in 2001.
It does. With Creed doing My Sacrifice as the theme tune. they also, during this show, big props to them. I mean, because, again, a lot of this production stuff we didn't really get to see, but they had, like, you know, different Raw themes showing clips, like stills from throughout the years. At one point, they showed CM Punk, which was interesting.
Yeah.
So then we get The Undertaker coming out. Now, I'd seen him earlier on the day doing a Make-A-Wish thing, and when he was walking around the room, he looked great. Like, he looked healthy, he looked happy, he was smiling, he was laughing. And he was moving quite well. He came out here. He did a very quick promo. They had Howard Finkel, like, from the video game or something, announcing him. You know,
I love that, by the way. That was awesome.
I mean, I'd have preferred Fink to be there, but okay.
I completely agree, but we couldn't tell that at home. Uh-huh. So,
oh, yeah, yeah. So if you can't tell, it's even better.
Yeah. So just the presentation of it, no, really, really fun.
So he comes out, there's a holy shit chant. There's also, I think it's later on at Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt, it's like, we got something.
Also, though, earlier in the night, I should have mentioned this earlier whenever we were discussing it, Vince thought that they were chanting, fuck you, Vince. And he was like, all right, we don't need any of that. And then Stephanie had to correct him and go, no, Vince, they're chanting thank you.
Ah.
And then he looked like, oh. All right, pal.
I like that stuff.
Ah, yeah.
So he comes out, he's, you know, chanting his name. He said, you know, this is the sacred ground of evil. It started 25 years ago. He'd been digging holes for anybody who dared to step onto the dark side. He mentions Steve Austin, Mick Foley, Kane. And then he says, they all tried, they all failed. And now on this sacred ground, I declare for all of those who have fallen, it is truly time you rest in peace. Jim Ross said, was this a warning? Jerry Lawler didn't really seem to know what it means. What I thought was, I didn't pick up on it when I was there, but when I was watching it back today, everybody's chatting one more match and all this stuff, and he just speeds through it. He doesn't stop and allow that to... So, I'm going to go to you first. They've hyped the return of The Undertaker on Raw 25. The discussion has been going on for months. He is coming back to wrestle. Before people ask that question, he is coming back to wrestle. But tell me what you thought of this segment being what it is. Was it good that they didn't give away what he's doing now? Or should they have capitalized on the show they had and done something now? What did you make of this segment?
This was just The Undertaker appearing because it's the 25th anniversary of Raw. a lot of people wanted John Cena to come out and club him in the head with a chair or whatever and, you know, set something up. But it's not even the Royal Rumble yet, you guys. We can't build the WrestleMania before the Royal Rumble. That's like celebrating Christmas before Halloween, Kenny. We can't do that. We got to have one before we can move on to the other. God,
the irony that you say that when one of your favorite wrestlers celebrates Christmas all fucking year.
Kenny, the problem with the Undertaker getting clubbed in the head with a steel chair is that if he does it enough times, then he too will want to celebrate Christmas all year round.
That is true. What I will say is, I thought this was the most underwhelming thing that they could have done, and I don't get it. I don't understand why just don't bring him back.
Well, they had to because it's the 25th anniversary of Raw.
And somebody said, I get what you're saying, you know, maybe you don't build the Cena thing straight away because Cena's got a very important feud with Elias. So we have to wait. But the thing that I thought was interesting is somebody had said to me, you know, how would you have booked it, you know, if it was up to me? And all he had to do, he could have cut that exact same promo, but all he had to say at the end was, "I've just dug one more hole," and dropped the mic.
Yeah. Because then you don't know if it's for someone else or if it's for himself. You don't know, and I completely agree with you. A lot of people were asking me how I would quote unquote fix that. I thought that it largely did its part, but because, you know, you can't be building towards a match, but maybe allude to a retirement and then walk out. And then everybody's buzzing. Oh, is the Undertaker retired? Is he coming back? Is he, you know, what's going on? And then that way, after the Rumble, next week, next Monday, you could build it properly with Cena coming out and the whole nine yards, the whole enchilada, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, the problem was he didn't do anything. He didn't say anything. Like, you could have gone to the bathroom and come back, and you didn't miss anything. And that's a problem. That's a problem.
Well,
like,
you would have missed him.
But he didn't do the Undertaker has been back enough times that it's not like, so if you say Steve Austin, right? When was the last time Steve Austin was on Raw? October of 2015.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So like, you don't want to miss that. But like, Taker, you know, he's on Raw for 3 months every year. You know, so it's like. And maybe part of it's because I actually am one of the people who does want to see him come back. So maybe that's part of my bias. And I was in the Manhattan Center and I thought, do you know what they could have done? Even just have... Could he not have tombstoned Damien Demento or something?
I do agree, yeah.
Anyway, so we had that. Then we see backstage the APA are playing cards with Heath Slater and Rhino. APA won the round, then Ted DiBiase shows up with a big stack of money, asking what the price was and laughing. Let's just go through all the card segments now. So they do that one, and then they come back to it later on with, they've added Jeff Hardy, MVP, and the Usos to it. Then they come back to it again later on when, Natalya and Titus Warren White is there. My favorite, she has won me, Dana Brooke is superb. She really is.
No, this was
by great. By my calculations, you're a liar. How do you calculate that?
Did you see the meme that someone made about people at the Manhattan Center using her?
No, I've not used it.
Okay, it's a meme and it's her with her notebook and it goes, "I've crunched the numbers. You've lost a lot of money." And then the person just tweeted with the subtitle, "For those that bought the Mania tickets at the Manhattan Center."
So good.
Sad but true.
And then we come back to the game again later on when what was happening in the last one?
They caught Heath Slater cheating, and the Million Dollar Man ended up winning everything.
My favorite thing with that was when DiBiase was like getting his money and like pushing it towards him. He just flung the pancake away.
That was Ralph's favorite part too. She's just like, "Fuck that pancake."
So what did you think of the APA card room segments?
This is what I would have cut. It went about two segments too long. It was fun. It was really fun, but this should have been a two segment deal. It should have been the introductory segment and then the segment later whenever it is revealed that Heath was cheating. That's how it should have gone.
Yeah, it was fine, but I mean, I was glad that Titus Worldwide got a little thing, but yeah, like you were saying, it's kind of, there's just nostalgia everywhere, and it should have kind of been cut into less segments. But then, you know, they booked 75 people, so what do you do? JoJo introduces some general managers from the past. We got John Laurinaitis with his big red suit and people power.
How great was that suit?
So good. It wasn't quite the white suit that he had, which was particularly atrocious, but the red suit is a firm second fave.
The red with the fucking blue linen. Oh god, the secondary blue color clashing against the red. Oh my god, so hideous.
William Regal comes out. Great, good reaction. Now this is the one that surprised me. The pop for Eric Bischoff was insane. Yeah. In New York, and you could tell when he came out, he fucking knew. He was like, ha ha ha, yes.
In New York, no doubt. Yeah. Good on Bish, a friend of the show.
Friend of the show. Also, I would say my favorite ever Raw General Manager.
Ooh.
Ow. So the only travesty was he was Raw GM from July 2002 to December 2005. So that covers the span of 3 WrestleManias, and he never got to be involved in a match at a WrestleMania. So it was a big miss on their part. He doesn't even need to be in one, even if he's like, you know, in somebody's corner or something. Eric Bischoff should have been involved in a WrestleMania. Daniel Bryan's the last one. He comes out, does the yes chant. They all do the yes chant with him. This was cool. I liked this.
Yeah, no. This was a nice little segment. And, of course, then The Miz comes out and has a stare down with Daniel Bryan, further fueling the rumors that will plague and ultimately ruin the Royal Rumble.
If you choose to let it. I might just adopt David's stance of just like, just expect nothing.
Yeah, no, for real. I implore every single person, because Daniel Bryan, the rumors that he is entering the Royal Rumble, they are swirling right now, and I don't think it's going to happen, Kenny. I really don't.
No, I don't. Whoever comes out
at 30 is fucking dead. It should be Rey Mysterio again, right? That should be his return.
poor Rey. I'm going to take the David J. McCutcheon approach to things, and I'm going to think that Roman Reigns is winning the Royal Rumble. And yes, the Women's Royal Rumble will be won by Stephanie. And we will build to WrestleMania with their matches on top. And then Hulk Hogan will never be seen again. And
yeah,
all the things I don't want to happen will happen. And anything else is a bonus.
Speaking of that, by the way, and speaking of Roman Reigns, who came out for his match with The Miz here, we did have a Twitter question. And it's apropos right now, so I'm just going to go ahead and ask you.
Sure.
Dawson, at Dawes... 2-1.
Ben Dawson, that is. Ben, yep.
Mr. Dawes himself, Big Dawes, the Big Dawes, it's his yard now. He says, who do you think Roman Reigns will eliminate last to win the Royal Rumble?
I think they will strike a deal with Bret the Hitman Hart to allow him to take his last bump for Roman Reigns.
Ooh, see, that's pretty good. Now, let me allow you a little, some words of advice, okay? Here you go. I'm going to set the scene. There's 11 men in the ring, and there's just, everything's going crazy. Everybody's buzzing. They're like, when's Daniel Bryan coming out? When's Daniel Bryan coming out? At number 29, Daniel Bryan comes out. The entire place erupts. Everybody just starts jacking each other off. It's great. It's just an orgy happens in Philadelphia as Daniel Bryan comes in and literally one by one chucks 11 men out of the ring until there's no one left, and he's the only one, and he's staring at the entranceway, and he's pumping up, he's doing his yes movements, and he's, yeah, oh man, he's really into it. And then Roman Reigns music comes on, and he's carrying a sign that says, watch me kill this vanilla midget. And then he rips the sign in two, jumps into the ring, and Daniel Bryan cowers to him, gets down on his knees and goes, no, Ric Flair style. And then Roman Reigns just lifts up Daniel Bryan by his beard, twirls him around with one arm, and chucks him into the third row. And Roman Reigns eliminates Daniel Bryan to win the Royal Rumble.
And that's basically how I'm going to think of life now. Is that kind of those kind of situations? That's
my aunt always used to say, prepare for the worst. That way, if anything else happens, you'll be at least a little bit happy.
Do you know what though? It's what's funny to me is that what I'm frustrated about this show is not what I thought I'd be frustrated about. I actually think that the state of the current roster and programs I'm enjoying for, you know, well, more Raw than SmackDown, but, you know, I'm enjoying them. So,
sure.
It wasn't that I felt all of a sudden that, like, you know, these are terrible. It was just more, oh, we had to sit through a ton of nostalgia that didn't really mean anything.
Yeah, so, and the nostalgia didn't even take place, really, at the Manhattan Center where it should have.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing from earlier on today was on our Facebook community, Dave Gill had said, shit, shower, shave, then Raw 25. And then Adam Kaler, I think it is, said, I'd have a longer shit if I were you. Oh, God. So we have, The Miz and Daniel Bryan have a face-off, which is exceptional. That's good fun. We get the match with The Miz against Roman Reigns for the IC title. Match goes about 12 minutes. We had a great time watching this in the arena. We were super into it. The referee eventually ejects Dallas and Axel. It was a great bit where Roman's doing a drive-by to one of the Miztourage, and Miz unbuckles the second turnbuckle. Miz hits his first skull-crushing finale. If I could change one thing in WWE, well, no, I'd probably change something else. One of the things I would change is when someone hits their finisher that you say, new champion! That's the sign I'm not going to see a new champion.
Yeah.
Please stop saying it.
That's a Vince McMahonism, you know. Remember whenever he was on commentary, whenever we were a kid, and he had the two modes, right? It would be, I'm really excited, I can't wait to... And then he would just click it over to the other one. And that would be very dismissive and a scowl, like, oh my God. So that would be exactly how he would count it. He'd go, we got a new champion here, there's no way... And he kicks out. that's purely from the Vince McMahon playbook. You can watch any match that he used to call for a championship. He did that every single time. So if you're wondering where it comes from,
Big Vinnie Mac. Yep. And so the Miz hits the first skull crushing finale, and then Reigns is going for a spear, and then Miz moves out the way. Reigns' head hits the turnbuckle, skull crushing finale again, and then Miz wins the Intercontinental Championship by beating Roman Reigns through cleverness and being a heel. This, for me, was, if you take away the nostalgia of Austin, this was the best thing on the show. This should have main evented the show. This should have happened in the fucking Manhattan Center. But anyway, various things. I thought this was really
I agree
good.
On all points there. we're in complete agreement. This was awesome. And whenever a lot of people, including yourself in a drunken stupor, admittedly, were dismissing the show, I was like, but we got a new Intercontinental Champion, and it was the best way possible. The heel cheated, and he won, and he's going to boast about it, and Roman doesn't have that stupid title anymore, so it's not going to be a Ultimate Warrior Hulk Hogan thing at WrestleMania. We won, you guys! What are you doing pouting? We did it! We had a fun little segment here that took the title away from Roman, and now it's going to matter more because it's on The Miz.
I agree. I think, I do want to say though, for Roman, I thought I've enjoyed this Intercontinental title reign way more than I enjoyed his US title reign in 2016.
Well, I mean, that's like saying that you enjoyed a shit after eating a bucket of jalapenos versus a bucket of habaneros, Kenny.
This is true. But I thought it was really good. I'm glad he's the champ again. I'm glad that he was able to beat Reigns decisively in a match. So it was good. It was fun.
Yeah.
Then now at this point we're just kind of like, right, okay, so we've now had a 12-minute match. Before that we had the general managers, and then after that we're now going to have another segment in the Barclays Center. We get Christian in the ring for a peep show. He brings out Jason Jordan and Seth Rollins. Seth's going to start talking, and Jason Jordan cuts him off and says, I've got this, and everybody just boos him the fuck out the building over and over again, and he just looks at it like, why are you guys booing me? We're the champs, you know, like, it's
he's got it, I said it, the voice of wrestling, right as usual, I predicted that shit long ago. To be fair, Kenny, you were also the voice of wrestling because you also predicted it long ago. We're very intelligent.
Thank you. You very rarely say nice things about me, so that's lovely to hear.
I do love it whenever you emulate my ideas.
Oh, for fuck's sake. So yeah, anyway, we get that. So Seth Rollins and Jason Jordan are having the interview with Christian. The bar ends up coming out and it escalates into a bit of a brawl. What did you make of the segment as a whole and Christian's peep show segment being brought back for it?
This was fine. Jason Jordan obviously stole the show. He's excellent as a heel. But yeah, I think it says a lot though about like Jordan and The Miz, because The Miz won the title and got the biggest reaction of the night. And then Jason Jordan just gets booed out of the building. So it's kind of funny how the tides have turned with heeldom. But yeah, this it was effective, I guess, is the way that I would title it. The bar, it's starting the "you suck" thing on Jason Jordan. That's going to stick. You're going to hear that from now on with Jason Jordan.
He's doing great. I thought the segment was fine, kind of like you, but Jason stole the show, as always. I mean, it's funny, like, see when Seth Rollins is put beside him, it shows you how boring of a superstar that he is.
Yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it? It sort of shows, it accentuates the shortcomings of Rollins.
Yeah, absolutely. Accentuates the shortcomings that he's got. So we then go to a backstage interview with Charlie Caruso, and she's got Alexa Bliss. She says, you know, do you think you'll still be champion at WrestleMania? And Bliss thought that was just, you know, her insulting her. Charlotte comes in. Charlotte, you know, towers over Alexa and says that, you know, the only reason Alexa's champ on Raw is because she's on SmackDown Live. Then Ric Flair comes into the picture, looks straight at the camera because he doesn't give a fuck. And then said that, you know, Alexa might be the champion tonight, but Charlotte will be the champion until she decides to hang up her robe and they woo together. Any thoughts?
Fun. It was good. I was happy to see Rick on TV after, you know, all those health scares and everything. I always like seeing him now. It's good to see that he's healthy and he looks pretty happy too. So, yeah.
We then cut back to the Manhattan Center once again, and by this time we had basically given up.
I knew
during the day when we were there who was going to be there and who wasn't. So I knew who was left, and we, you know, you knew the club were going to be with DX. That was what it was going to be.
Yeah.
So Bray Wyatt comes out, Matt Hardy comes out to not a lot of a reaction.
I was wondering about that. What was with that?
I think people were just done. We were done with the fact that we were sitting watching a big screen after we paid so much money. It was just a Bray Wyatt, Matt Hardy match in the middle of a show after we waited the better part of an hour with nothing. People were just done. People were just kind of, they understood that this was just kind of, there's only so long that you can watch all the good stuff stuff happen at the other place.
Yeah, before you just lose the will to fight. No, I get it.
So I do want to give a shout out though to the old school blue referee shirts with the bow tie. Excellent touch.
Oh, so good. Reminds me of Bill Alfonso, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Chioda got a chant. Was that in this match?
I think it might have been actually. Yeah. But we got Woken Matt Hardy against Bray Wyatt. It went 5 minutes, and then Bray Wyatt pinned him very easily with Sister Abigail, in almost a squash. I don't know if this is a sign that Vince has given up on the gimmick, or if it's part of the story they plan to tell with the gimmick. You couldn't really get a clear picture of it, so I don't really know. But in the arena, it was just kind of there. How did it come across on TV?
It came across like it was just kind of there on TV too. I'm not too worried about the Matt thing. A lot of people were all like, well, why didn't Matt Hardy win his match? And it's like, well, let's be perfectly honest, Kenny. Matt Hardy's not going to hold a world title in the WWE. That's probably not going to happen. You never say never, but it's probably not going to happen. But he is going to be one of the best mid-card baby faces that they have. And right now, you have a mid-card heel with Bray Wyatt. I would prefer that this happen and Matt Hardy go on to eliminate Bray Wyatt at the Royal Rumble than the inverse, because I think that is a better story and it's going to get a better pop and a better reaction at the Rumble whenever Matt Hardy eliminates Bray Wyatt than the inverse.
Yeah, I would agree. So, you know, the match itself was just there.
Yeah, it was kind of a nothing match.
Now, I don't really know the timings here, so I'm going to get it wrong, but we did have two cruiserweight matches at the venue. Just, you know, to kill my soul a little bit more. We got... Fuck, I'm trying to find... One was Lince Dorado against somebody, which was crap. Which, you know, when you paid
$400... You sound so enthralled.
$475 to see Pound... Not even Pound... I mean, Lince Dorado seems a lovely man, but, you know, come on.
Sure.
It's the Manhattan Center for Raw 25, and we're getting this. Was Kenzo Suzuki busy? Oh. So, that happens, which we didn't even know was a dark match, but... Anyway... So then we of course, go back to the Barclays Center. Now, we didn't see this because... So, after Matt Hardy lost, Jeff Hardy appeared in the Manhattan Center off air. And okay. This was cool. He came in the ring and Matt, he was trying to, you know, console Matt. And then he sang Fade Away and Classify Yourself as Obsolete. So
my goodness.
That was cool. But
Yeah.
You can, you, because, but in the big screen, they started showing you the Bellas come out for the women's thing, and then they cut it to Jeff. So, we kind of understood we were getting a kind of dark thing here. So, maybe, that was, you know what, that was probably the best part of the Manhattan Center show.
Yeah, I can imagine that. You describing it, I was like, it's something I would have liked to have seen. Instead of another Heath Slater thing.
But on TV, we get the Bella Twins, Maryse Kelly, Lillian Garcia, Jacqueline, Tori Wilson, Michelle McCool, Terry Runnels, Maria Kanellis, and Trish Stratus coming out to say hi. Was this good? If it wasn't good, what would you have done instead with these women?
That's kind of a lofty thing. I mean, you know, it fulfilled the thing of, like, with the GMs and everything, but you had all these women come out as, like, legends, but you didn't have a men's thing like that, so it kind of put the women's division in the same bucket as the GMs and, you know, things of that nature, you know? It I don't know, it didn't feel like it mattered as much, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, and I what I will say is there... I heard from somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody that one of the legends who were brought back on this show said to somebody else, I came back for this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's just they could have shaved 20 people off of who they brought in and it would have been better. So
yeah, and I don't think you would have noticed either.
No. No offense to, you know, I mean, I actually do get the Brother Love thing because he has a very big podcast.
Yeah. No offense to the Brooklyn Brawler and Harvey Whippleman, but...
Yeah. I mean, right. they could have quite easily just beaten the card game. You know? Elias is backstage and crosses paths with Chris Jericho. Now, wait a minute. I know that people enjoyed this, but I want you to just go with me for a second. WWE have the hottest fucking wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
Who just main evented the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
And he's in a backstage segment?
Yeah. That is
stupid decision to make. I mean, now I get that Jericho's going away. Jericho's not there right now. And where I will give them kind of, you know, a little bit of a pass is that it's very hard to introduce his new character in one night when you don't know when he's next going to be back.
And beyond that too, though, is do you really want to put the spotlight on a guy who's going to be headlining New Japan shows with Tetsuya Naito?
What I would think you could have done though is set something up for whenever he comes back, and if he doesn't come back, fine. Do you know the amount of times that Shawn Michaels used to superkick people when he was the commissioner because we thought it might lead to a match and never did?
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I still love the main event of the first SmackDown with, well, the first, like, when it was a series run. In August of 99, when Michaels super kicked The Rock during the title match. Great.
Like, now I had heard rumors that The Rock never wanted to work with Shawn Michaels.
I heard those too.
Yeah. So I don't know how much you can really blame on creative there as opposed to the players involved.
But I guess more my thing is, whether it happens or not, I still think you should do something. Now, I was very surprised he did the list, because from the time that I spent with him and just what I've heard, I assume that he's more the sort of person that doesn't really want to revisit past stuff, but I think that he probably understood that he kind of, you know...
The most recent thing, and it's what people wanted.
Now, that's the negative. The plus point is, I thought the segment was great.
Oh, yeah. No, this segment, I'll be honest with you, this is a top five segment, and that is entirely on the two people involved. Entirely. Because what they gave them, I agree. Jericho should have been given something more. But the two of these guys killed it, man. This was on fire. I was laughing the entire time. I love Chris Jericho. I do, man. Just the GOAT. In this household, in the McCutcheon Mearshart household, Kenny, the GOAT.
He is great. He is fantastic. And it was really fun to see. And then we cut to Elias in the ring. He points out Jimmy Fallon in the crowd. The fans boo him.
We should go back and revisit. Jericho was wearing his non-WWE New Japan merch.
The Alpha Club, yeah. Well, that is his own merch, kind of like the Hot Topic thing that Cody and the Bucks do. So that shows you the clout he has. I mean, I don't think Vince even fucking knew what the T-shirt was, so he can kind of get away with it. But yeah, interesting. Interesting that the most fascinating people are sometimes the people who are too big to fuck with.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyways, let's get back to shitting on Jimmy Fallon, my all-time favorite pastime.
Now, why do you hate him so much? I've never asked you this. What, like,
Basic bitch. He is the basic bitch of nighttime comedy. He normalized Donald Trump. He pet Donald Trump on the head and was like, "Oh, look, mein Führer." So he was. He very much is the lowest common denominator of comedy. He plays games and all this bullshit on his show because he can't hack it as a actual funny person. And beyond that, he's just not funny. I hate Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Fallon, Kenny, can go fuck himself eternally. He is the basic bitch.
Wow, that's a real hate. So anyway, Elias takes some jabs at him, so you would have enjoyed that. Elias then sings a song where he also takes jabs at Steve Austin, The Undertaker, and Chris Jericho. John Cena comes out. Cena then pointed at a beach ball party that started just as it ended, proving that John Cena is the worst.
Yeah, no, this was bad.
Then, in the end, Elias goes for a cheap shot on Cena, but Cena does the five-knuckle shuffle, tries to get him for his AA, and then Elias low blows him, grabs his guitar, slams it over the back of Cena's back, and does his drift away finisher. So, when Elias comes out and sings and cuts, you know, ribs everybody, or rips on everybody, and then beats up John Cena... I'm not gonna be offended at that. I would have preferred. Yeah. I'd have preferred if I'd not had to pay $475 to watch it on a big screen. But
yes,
you know, it was decent. What do you think of the segment?
I don't want to see John Cena and Elias again. We saw it the first time and it was horrible, so I don't want to see it again. Also, what was with that? He low blowed John Cena and just held his forearm there for like a fucking 15 seconds. Right on his dick, and then sniffed his forearm like it had cocaine on it.
Yeah, very strange.
Did Elias want to know what John Cena's dick smelled like, or what was going on there, Kenny?
I mean, I wasn't there. You know, you probably had a better view of it than me. I mean, I know I have connections, but I don't have Elias's number to just be like, why did you smell your hand after you touched John Cena's dick? I don't.
Well, maybe if you ever interview Elias, you can ask him what John Cena's dick smells like. Inquiring minds want to know, how big is Batista's dick and what does John Cena's dick smell like? So there you go. You know, if I had to take a guess, Kenny, I would say fresh cotton and sweet pea. Not gurin, mind you. Sweet pea, the flower.
Okay, I didn't see it going this direction. We then have Mark Henry talking to Godfather and a woman called Olivia, who Henry is kind of checking out, and then Godfather says that's his wife.
Mark Henry, you're married. Stab it.
Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews against Heath Slater and Rhino. They end up fighting to a no contest. And then the Dudleys come out. What did Devon do to his face? He like shaved all of his hair off of his face. It looked really weird.
I didn't notice, I'll be perfectly honest. I noticed that he was wearing a very baggy shirt, though.
So the Dudleys basically come out, and then Rhino and the Titus Worldwide end up throwing Heath Slater to the wolves, and the Dudleys do all their finishes. What did you make of this? I like the Dudleys. This could have all been cut, really.
Yeah, this was... or it could have been just a lot quicker. That, like, right as the bell rang for that match, they could have come out and done this instead of belaboring the point. Booker T was burying Devon on commentary, calling out how fat he was and everything. Booker T, like, he really doesn't like other African-American men, I don't think. Like, genuinely. I've been, like, researching this. And every time there's another African-American man on the screen, he's constantly just burying them. I don't know what's going on with that, but something to keep in mind for all the listeners out there. I love the Dudleys. They're my all-time favorite tag team. Nobody else is even close. So I always pop whenever I get to see them.
They're a fun team. They're a good time. So, again, I mean, this is something that could have happened in the Manhattan Center rather than being here.
Why didn't it? Because of the fact that the Dudley boys had some amazing matches in the Manhattan Center with ECW, Kenny.
Yeah. But
I think of the Manhattan Center, like, I think of Raw, obviously, but right next to it, like, not even behind it, but right next to it, alongside it, is all of the ECW pay-per-views where the Dudleys were the fucking main focus.
It's... Yeah, I mean, again, it's just another thing where you kind of go, you could have just done that over there and we might have been happier.
Yeah.
Charlie Caruso speaks to AJ Styles, but AJ's brought someone in to do the interview for him. It's Gene Okerlund. Gene Okerlund looks... he looks old and drunk, but God bless him.
He looks so old. Oh, my God, it broke my heart how old he looks.
AJ does a bit of the Hulk Hogan kind of, let me tell you something, Mean Gene... And then he talks about how he's going to beat Cammy. I mean, can someone get it to AJ Styles that's not over?
Oh, the shit that they feed him, just utterly dreadful. I don't know why they are throwing him bad lines like that.
Yes, quite promo. I mean, I don't really know why AJ Styles was there. That didn't really need to be there. So
yeah, I he's the champion. They got to have the champion on the show.
So. We're back to the Manhattan Center for the final Manhattan Center segment of the night. It was the reunion of DX. I calculated it. I think it's the 726th reunion of D-Generation X. So nice to be in the building for one of those historic moments.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and given that Sean had said to me when we were on tour, he was like, do you know what I'm doing when I'm there? And I was like, why would I know?
Mr. Inside Scoop.
Mr. Inside Scoop. I mean, it's just... It makes no sense whatsoever.
Brian Maxwell Mann, a former writer for WWE, he actually tweeted out and he goes, no group in history has benefited from revisionist history more than DX. And I entirely agree with that. I am not a DX guy.
I like them sometimes, and other times I don't. But... I just think this has been done 100 times. So then they come out and they do the usual shtick, and then they end up talking their favorite moments of the last 25 years. And then Michael says, you know, I used to be the boss of the group, now you're the boss of everything. And then they bring out Road Dog. They do mention Rick Rude and China for DX, which I thought was nice to bring up. Then they talk about Manhattan Center being home for Raw, that DX will be at the forefront of the next 25 years. Will they, though?
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway, so they bring the New Age Outlaws. Now, so Sandra and I were talking about this. How bad did the fucking Road Dog look? But then how spectacular did Billy Gunn look? Which bodes the weird question. Yeah. Kids, if you start taking drugs, keep taking them.
Yeah.
Because if you stop, you're going to look like the Road Dog. If you keep going, you're going to look like Billy Gunn. You know? So it's...
I will say, by the way, Sean Waltman looked great in this too.
Yeah, yeah, he looked better than he's looked. He looked better than he looked at Raw 1000. We'll give him that.
He looks healthy now, I guess is the way to put it.
Yes, so, he does. He does. And then they bring out Scott Hall as Razor Ramon. And then the club comes out, and then the All Too Sweet, and then the Revival come out, and then we get a tag match with Gallows and Anderson against the Revival. Gallows and Anderson win the match pretty quickly, and then the DX members come back in the ring, and then the Revival get beat up by X-Pac, Road Dogg, Billy Gunn, Sean, Hunter, and Finn Balor. So what did you make of this segment? Segment?
Well, Val and I had a bet going on earlier in the night, Kenny. And the bet was, who is going to beat up the Revival and job them out and make them look weak? And I picked the Dudley Boys. And unfortunately, as per usual, you'd think after knowing her for 21 years of my life that I would know my wife is always right. But she was right. She picked the New Age Outlaws, Kenny. And the poor Revival were stepped on and humiliated and ridiculed, and they're on their way to becoming the new Ascension. But I guess the one plus to that is, man, oh, man, they put the club over here. And it was kind of cool seeing the Bullet Club and DX and the Too Sweet and the Click all reunite here and sort of a passing of the torch, if you will. I love that aspect of it. And I despised what happened to my favorite tag team in WWE, the Revival.
It's funny. I don't hate it as much as you do because I actually like that there were current guys involved who got over. That made me feel better about it.
I agree.
So, and you know, at least there was a match. It wasn't the way what happened to Damian Sandow when he was when he got that kind of treatment on Raw 1000. I just thought the DX thing, nothing against them. I just thought it was boring, and they've done it 100 times before. There was nothing new.
Yeah. DX just doesn't do anything for me. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I see DX. I really enjoy watching Hunter. I really enjoy watching Sean. And seeing the 1-2-3 kid again, loved it. Totally great. Scott Hall, loved it. But it gets to a point, though, to where, like, you see all these guys together, and it's just like, oh, boy, here comes the jerk session, you know?
Yeah, the thing is, you can only come back so many times and not have anything new to offer.
Yeah, to where you're just treading old ground consistently. Yeah, no, I agree.
So, but I did, like I said, I did like the club being involved. That was good.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the conclusion of the Manhattan Center portion. So I just want to say, it is the biggest waste of money I've ever spent on a wrestling ticket. And if you ask me right now, I'm not even saying this lightly. If I could retroactively swap my ticket, I would have gone to the Barclays Center.
Oh, yeah, easy.
Because people were like, oh, but you got to go and see the Manhattan Center. But it wasn't a great experience. It wasn't the experience that I'd hoped it would be. So, yeah, if I had the chance to... And people were saying, well, you were shitting on the show. Why? How could you? And I said, no, I'm shitting on my experience in the Manhattan Center.
If I'd have been at the Barclays was a fun show.
Oh, I'd have been happy for the Barclays. I mean, yeah, I'd have had a good time. The Barclays do a great mac and cheese.
I'm sure they do.
I'd have been all over that.
Kenny, let me tell you something, brother. You've been to a ton of wrestling shows overseas for you. You've come to our fair country, and you've enjoyed plenty of splendor. And if this is the first time that you really feel disappointed and struck out after over a decade of traveling, I'd say you had a good run.
Well, I mean, WrestleMania 27 was atrocious. But, you know, the thing with WrestleMania 27...
But you also get the whole weekend experience if you go to WrestleMania. Yeah, the event itself doesn't have to win you. But the remainder of it, the Raw after and the build for it and everything, it's a spectacle, yeah. And it's fun.
And, you know, it's not poor me, and I did get the chair and all that sort of stuff, but it was just really disappointing as an experience. Yeah, had I been to the Barclays, I'd have had fun. Also, there was another match, sorry, at some point, I can't remember when, where Drew Gulak teamed with Tony Nese against two, I think it was Akira Tozawa and Hideo Itami. And they might as well have all had an orgy, and we wouldn't have even noticed, because nobody really cared. People were just so frustrated at what they'd gotten, and they knew that the DX thing was just going to be the last thing we were going to get. Now, they did have The Miz come out later on and show up unannounced, and he did, to Miz's credit, he was like, "Oh, sorry, were you expecting CM Punk?" Which was just the best line. And then Seth Rollins showed up, and then Seth Rollins and DX beat up The Miz off air. So, you know, that I get they were trying to give us something, we just... You didn't feel the Manhattan Center was really part of the show. Yeah. And I think that's what people would want it to be. So, very disappointing. But anyway, we come back to the Barclays Center. Kurt Angle's music plays, brings down all the legends. Then Braun and Kane come out. Heyman introduces himself, and he says that he was going to bring them something relevant. God, I love him. He said his client was there for a nostalgia trip. He was there for a fight. And he's the most relevant personality in the 1,287 episodes of Raw. Lesnar comes out. Strowman meets him at ringside. They start brawling. And then Lesnar puts Kane down with an F5. Strowman power slams Lesnar through the broadcast table. Strowman's music plays. You know, he's reigning supreme before Sunday. And Lesnar kind of sold the attack as the show closed. What did you make of the final segment as a final hook for this triple threat on Sunday?
Dreadful. Like, utterly horrible. It telegraphed that Lesnar is retaining, which we all knew. You know, I told everybody, go out and bet all the money in your savings account on it. So it's already being telegraphed, but this did nothing for me. I have never been less excited for a Braun Strowman or Brock Lesnar match. And I don't know what that says about Kane, but yeah, I do not care one iota about that match, Kenny. It's doing nothing for me at all.
I'm more into this match than I was Brock Lesnar and Dean Ambrose. But that's probably the only other one that I would compare it to. I thought the final segment was flat, but fine. I didn't hate it as much as you did, but I certainly didn't think it was good.
This was so boring.
But you know what, like, sometimes you go for a match, you think people are going to go for it, and they don't. So, you know, it is what it is. Now, here's the interesting part. We're going to go to your questions in a minute, but before we get to any questions, it's time for a rating on this show. Now, here's what I'm basing my rating on before I give it. I'm not basing it on the Manhattan Center experience. I've rewatched it as a TV show. I'm not basing it as an average episode of Raw. I'm basing it on a 25th anniversary edition of the show and what a 10 out of 10 would be for that and what we got for that particular kind of show, if that makes sense. But I'm coming to you first, sure. David. Out of 10, what are you giving this show? And we want your reasons as to why you are giving it what you're giving it.
I would give this show a 8 out of 10, Kenny. I like this show. It was dumb fun. And occasionally, I'll use an analogy that feels appropriate. Occasionally, you know, your body needs fuel and it needs sustenance, and you got to eat clean. You got to eat your chicken breast and your broccoli and your brown rice. But sometimes, Kenny, you got to order a pizza. And sometimes you just got to gorge on the pizza and be dumb and fat and happy. And that's what this show was. It wasn't supposed to be nutritious, Kenny. There was no supposed nutrition involved in this show. This was a dumb, fun show that included a segment where Steve Austin gave a 70-year-old man a stunner. And that 70-year-old man was none other than Vincent Kennedy McMahon. An excellent topper. We got to see a title change hands very appropriately, back to The Miz, exactly where it needed to be. The cameo with Chris Jericho was just perfect. Excellent comedy. Loved it. They took chicken shit and made the most delicious of chicken salad out of it. Just absolutely brilliant stuff. The club getting put over as a passing of the torch from DX. Big moment, regardless if people want to acknowledge it or not. That's really, really significant, I think. So between all of those things, could it have been better? Yeah, but the nostalgia, little too heavy on it, but it was peppered in and I ate up the stuff that was peppered in there. It's like too many pepperonis on the pizza, Kenny. It's not good for you, but I'm going to eat them anyway if they're on there.
So, knowing me as you do, I was talking to somebody last night. I'm not going to name who he is, but he's been on the show lots of times, and he used to write for WWF Magazine, so you can put it together. And he crashed at our room last night, and we got up this morning, and he was talking about what I'd put out on Twitter about the show. And, yeah. he said, the funny thing to me, Kenny, is he says, you put them over all the time. You know, he said, you're not a guy that takes, because I think sometimes that when you're talking about wrestling, and I'm not, this is not a dig at you at all, sometimes sure. you'll over egg the negativity of something for the banter.
Yeah, of course. I'm blanking on it, but you have to crank things up to 11 in order to get the best comedy out of it.
Yeah, and it's a weird thing where you kind of have a podcast persona almost, and
sure.
I try very hard to. I don't really think I mean, sometimes I have that, but like if you meet me, I'm pretty much the way that I am in the podcast. But anyway, so he had said, you know, it's so for he said for you to be talking about it being this negative, really should be an indication that the program is a problem, because you very rarely go that all out to say that you're that frustrated. So with all that said, I've watched it back. I've talked to you about how I felt about different parts of it. What do you think my rating is going to be for this show?
I think it'll be a 6.
Okay, so I have gone back and forth, and I've thought about everything about it, and I'm going to give this episode of Monday Night Raw, Raw 25, a 4 out of 10.
Oh, my goodness. This is the longest, this is the biggest disparity we've had between ratings, Kenny.
Yep, and I'm going to tell you why. I thought that they should not have booked two venues. They should have just done this show in the Barclays Center.
Yeah.
And it would have been easier. But by putting in the Manhattan Center, you're giving people a expectation level. And this is all I'm going to say about the Manhattan Center bit, because that is more personal, and I'm trying to not make it personal. The amount of effort they went into for the aesthetic in Manhattan Center was like, you know, unreal. And then, like, Jerry Lawler fell asleep, ladies and gentlemen. There are pictures where he fell asleep during the show.
JR is combating that on Twitter. He says that it is utterly ridiculous.
Now, this is really horrible to talk about. In the same photo, it looks like JR might be sleeping, but that's the way JR's eyes look from the side after his Bell's palsy attacks. Like
exactly. JR was wide awake, but I think he was referring to anyone sleeping at that desk. Which...
Well, I don't know. I think Lawler was catching a few Z's, and I don't blame him.
Yes.
But I think the show overall, the Austin thing was great, but the rest of it, I mean, the attempted stuff, but you know, the main event segment was flat. The Undertaker did nothing. The DX thing was so long and boring. There was so many, you know, backstage legend segments that didn't really mean much. John Cena's feuding with Elias now, because Samoa Joe got injured. Bray Wyatt squashed Matt Hardy. The Miz did win. The Miz and Roman Reigns was probably the highlight of the show. But a 3-hour-and-15-minute show celebrating 25 years of the company, and the only two things that I would recommend that you need to go and see are The Miz against Roman Reigns and the Austin segment. This was a bad episode. Like, for me, I think if it was a regular episode of Raw, it'd be like a 9. Because you'd be like, what the fuck are all these people doing here? But for, like, Raw 25 and the expectation level they had, and it being a simulcast, I think they fluffed it. I don't think it was up to scratch. And, you know, if you've got somebody who's been brought in saying, why am I doing this? Should really be telling you that some of the talent aren't feeling it. Now, The positive that I will try and glean, because I always try and be positive, even when I give this monumentally low rating, which I think might be my lowest rating of all the ones we've done so far.
Possibly, yeah.
I think they are in good shape for the Royal Rumble. I think they're in good shape for the WrestleMania season coming up. I don't think they're getting to worry about. I think this nostalgia was at the wrong time. It's the go-home show for the Royal Rumble. It was just weird. So I'll give them those passes, but I think they should feel ashamed of themselves for the money they charge to the Manhattan Center for those people. The thing is, I do quite well financially. Not well enough to where, like, I'm, you know...
I was going to say, Kenny, I've heard you message me at, like, 3 in the morning crying about how you have barely $100 to your name and you need to go grocery shop.
I mean, listen, I am in a very lucky position. And
yes.
I remember a couple of years ago, I was so skint that I had to buy Super Noodles and I could barely get to the end of the month. That has only happened to me twice since, and that's because it was right before the Goldberg and the Shawn Michaels tours, and every single bit of money I had was in those, so I had nothing left. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is, I do okay, and I was lucky enough, and I was lucky enough that when the Goldberg tour was finished, I hadn't really spent any money on myself, and I decided to spend $475 on a ticket to Raw 25. So it doesn't really mean much to my bottom line to, you know, but there are people in that building who I guarantee you scraped and scrimped, and their one excursion of the year was this. And I think they were shafted, and I think that the company should feel ashamed of themselves. And it's borderline disgusting, I think, what they put on at that arena. Sorry, the Manhattan Center. That's not part of my rating. That's me just now talking personally about what I thought. But
yes,
let's talk about let's see the questions that people have put in. I'm gonna just find them.
I will say I think the difference between us is that you had expectations and I had zero.
Very true, which is why I'm expecting Roman Reigns to win the Royal Rumble on Sunday. If he does not, I will be celebrating.
I implore all of you, do not expect Daniel Bryan and expect Roman to win, because that is officially my prediction anyway. But if it doesn't happen, then guess what? I'm wrong, and I've never been happier to be wrong.
So let's get to the questions. We'll try and do them semi-quick fire here, if we can, because we've already gone an hour and 45 minutes here on the podcast. So,
but I think
it's been
a huge monumental show. So,
but I think this has been one of our best episodes, to be honest.
I would absolutely agree.
So, Oliver Drake wants to know, where does the cruiserweight division go from here, David? What do you think?
Down the shitter.
Yeah, I think the cruiserweight division is... I think... Enzo going away and not having much else going on could mean the end of 205 Live as a live post-SmackDown thing. I think it could be a full-sale thing.
It's done because Nia Jax and Goldust are beating the 205 Live guys on house shows. So
Mikey Gormley wants to know, if you could have rejigged the shows to make it more balanced, which segments would you have moved? So is there anything big that you would have moved from Barclays to the Manhattan Center to even it out a little bit?
Anything with nostalgia outside of the Austin thing, because the Austin thing needed that huge pop from the huge crowd. If it involved nostalgia, it should have been at the Barclays. At the Manhattan Center.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I think you could have just moved over the Miz and Roman Reigns, and it would have been that the Manhattan Center wanted something that meant something, and that meant something.
Yeah, they got nothing otherwise.
So, Chris Stevenson, I guess this one's for me. What's my view on the show, watching it on TV and then being there live? Was the crowd very vocal about little happening in the Manhattan Center? Yeah, people were pissed. The atmosphere when we were leaving was very despondent, very sad, very angry. Like, everybody was there to have a good time. Everybody was there. Like, there was a guy who had, like, the placards, like the Raw girls used to have in 1993. There was a guy in Zuba pants. There was guys in IcoPro t-shirts. There was a guy dressed as Bobby Heenan in drag that we talked about. Everybody was there to have a good time. They wanted...
Somebody even had a sign that said, stay tuned for silk stockings.
Yeah, amazing. There was a guy dressed up as Randy Savage from WrestleMania 9. Everybody wanted to have a good time and everybody wanted to celebrate Raw. And we were treated like the bastard child and I don't understand why. And I think what was more frustrating was that it was almost like, oh, DX and The Undertaker can be there. but they don't need to do anything. They can just be there.
Yeah.
And I think actually watching it back on TV today, I think it was a fun nostalgia show if you were just watching it on TV and didn't have any expectations going in. But I think if you're someone like me or Sondra, or you know, who gets really, really hyped and really excited, then you were going to be disappointed by it.
You know, I brought it up with Sondra last week, Kenny, and this is more of like an existential thing for me, but I don't think I like the WWE that much anymore.
I heard you talking about that. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, like my excitement level for WWE programming, with how formulaic it is, it caps out at about an 8 or an 8.5. Like, I never get excited and get out of my seat anymore.
What do you think they could... what do you think they could do to get you... Because it's, like, it's funny, because sometimes we'll talk about it, and you know, you'll say something's bad, and I'm going, but it's not like late 2014 bad. Like, that was when... I mean, that for me, that was when it was like, how the fuck do you keep talking about this stuff? It's so bad.
What late 2014 is that's the car going into the ditch, and this... Everything from that point on is the tire spinning, trying to get out of the ditch from all the mud.
But is it more because you say that, but we do have stuff like Samoa Joe or Braun Strowman or whatever.
What has Samoa Joe done besides lose?
I don't know, I think it's been about the stories he's been involved in. It doesn't really bother me that he's. I mean, like, it doesn't bother me that he's lost. I've just enjoyed the program.
It damages his credibility, though. If he can't win any matches, why should I ever believe that he's a force to be reckoned with?
Well, what I was going to ask you, though, is do you think the reason that you're not able to get invested is because that they have their idea on who the guy is, and it takes the investment out of you getting behind somebody to become the guy?
You know what it is? That's a huge part of it. And you know what it is? It's sitting down, it's DVRing... the football match, right? It's DVRing the football match, and it's Manchester United versus the Hoboken Boca Dokes, right? So
I love the Hoboken Boca Dokes.
Yeah, and you know, you got on your Hoboken Boca Doke hat and your jersey sweater, and you sit down with your big old bucket of popcorn. You worked all day, Kenny, and you know, you sit down and you're ready for it, and you're all like, oh man, this is for the championship. I don't know who's going to win, but go Hoboken Dokes. And you sit down with your popcorn, and all of a sudden your buddy texts you and goes, yeah, the Hoboken Dokes lost 62-3. And you go, well, shit, now should I even watch it? I mean, it's going to be a horrible blowout. It's the worst possible outcome that could ever happen. So should I even care if I know?
Is this like your way of quitting the Raw Rundown?
No, it's not, but it's... I realize whenever this is absolutely sincere. It's not like, New Japan's better. But, like, I realize whenever I watch New Japan, I get, like, actually excited. It reminds me of whenever I was a kid again. Or, like, you know, anywhere from, like, you know, I don't know who's going to win. Is it going to be Bret or Owen Hart? It's, like, that feeling mixed with, like, whenever I watched ECW and I was like, man, Jerry Lynn's got to beat Rob Van Dam now. The booking situation, Rob Van Dam's beat him 3 times in a row. The 4th time's got to be it. And it's just like the encapsulation of those two worlds mixed with the non-commercial break formulaic, oh, well, they did a fucking Tope Suicida outside, so automatically cut to the Domino's commercial.
Yeah, it's like, obviously you do love New Japan and that kind of thing, and it's funny because to me it's... I still enjoy WWE, I really do, and I think the downside of it is that I get very excited, and then half the time my excitement is quashed. But sometimes it's not, you know, sometimes you do get some good stuff. I think that the one thing I think has really hurt WWE programming in the last 2.5 years is the Roman Reigns thing. And you had a really good point that I think you brought up, either with me or Sondra, I think it was with Sondra, where you said, I'm just ready for him to beat Brock.
Yes.
And I think you're right, that's what, like, I wish we'd just done that last year. And got it out of the way.
Absolutely, 110% agree. Get it out of the way. If it's going to happen eventually, I would rather take my medicine last week and feel better for this week than to just feel like shit and not just take the medicine and get it over with can start building new people and feeling better about it.
Yeah, well, you know, I like Roman Reigns. as a performer.
I do too. He's fine, but we need people other than him.
I think what's going to help him is him not having this. It's like everybody knows. Everybody knows there's the Brock thing, and it's like what I'm excited about is once this WrestleMania is over and it's done, it's like we've got no idea what next year's going to be.
Yeah.
Because,
Kenny, we knew this was going to be the main event literally whenever WrestleMania ended last year.
Yeah, so it's... Anyway, let's quickfire get through these because there's a lot of them and we should give people their questions. Anthony Tate says, were you chatting bullshit with the rest of the Manhattan crowd while the Cruiserweight match going on? Yes, I was. Ben Dawson also asks, what was the fucking point in the Manhattan Center? I think they thought it was just like, if we have it, it's cool. And I think I don't think they quite... See, if the Manhattan Center had been 1993 prices, I would not be anywhere near as annoyed. I think they needed to make...
Why not book the Manhattan Center and just hire actors to be there instead?
What they needed to make it clear what it was. Because they didn't make it clear. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Ben Povey wants to know, so I guess this is to me, so you've crossed the Manhattan Center off your bucket list. Was it an equivalent of Never Meet Your Heroes? I mean, yeah, it was, but nothing to do with them. I mean, the Manhattan Center, David has already told me that we're going to the Manhattan Center together at some point to watch ROH, so we can have a good time. The Manhattan Center, you have to go. It is a bucket list thing. You have to go. I am glad I went. I'm not glad about what I got, but I'm glad that I went. Josh wants to know, Josh Owens, do you feel WWE missed an opportunity to build interest to the Rumble and Mania with a large casual audience tuning in last night? I do think so. I think they had the biggest Raw audience they're going to have apart from the night after Mania, and I think they needed to hook you with something. Something.
You know what they needed to close out the show? They needed a big bronze stunt.
Yeah. But I think they needed something, whether it was with Taker or something, like... Because you can do a story. The Shawn Michaels story with Undertaker at WrestleMania 26, that started in December. But now it's kind of, would they have an idea of how to book a weekly story with...
Yeah.
But, and I don't know. I mean, because I think Cena's on every Raw after the Rumble through Mania, so... I guess we'll see. Ollie wants to know, should they have done more with Trish Stratus?
Yes.
Oh, that chuckle. Yeah, they should have. Matt wants to know, is there any benefit to seeing Austin Stun McMahon's or Undertaker promos in big anniversary shows when what they could have done was more build... Sorry, let me read you this. Is there any benefit to seeing Austin Stun McMahon's or the Undertaker promos on big anniversary shows when more could have been done to build up and or put over current talent, especially in a go-home show to a big pay-per-view? Well, you answer first. Sorry, Cam, I'm hogging it.
I don't want Austin to stun current talent, no. Make him stun Vince McMahon, it's what everyone wanted to see, and it doesn't bury anybody else.
I think he's right. I think Matt is right, but not about the scenarios he's put forward. Like, Austin stunned the McMahons and Undertaker, who's gonna be having a match this year, you don't really want to mark those waters. Whereas like all the other stuff, like DX and stuff, they should be used to put over current talent.
But they did do the thing with the club. So.
I guess it's whether did that work? Time will tell.
Yeah, too early to tell.
But you know what? It is a very good sign. A very good sign that Triple H wanted to put Balor over like that.
It is, and maybe that is Vince doesn't see much in Balor, but Triple H does. I really don't know. But asking if something is. Is that going to be effective literally the day after it happened? That's a long-term thing. That's like taking pills and going, well, I'm not cured yet. And it's like, well, no, they have to be in your blood flow a little bit before it'll work.
I'm basically going to skim through some of these. Sorry we're not going through all of them. What other ones will we do? Ian, and that's interview with Raw. Gareth Neely wants to. I guess this is more for me because you liked it. In your opinion, what could have been done to make last night's show better? Less nostalgia and more, because what Raw 1000 did great was had loads of nostalgia, but also had current stories, and it ended with a bang. It ended with CM Punk turning heel. This didn't end with a bang. It ended with a whimper.
Yeah.
And James Walterson wants to ask me, can WWE do anything that will make you stop watching or take a break? Obviously, if you didn't put... If I hadn't been podcasting, I don't know if I would... I think I would have probably tuned out. I loved SummerSlam 2014. Like, I really loved that show. I think it's one of the best WWE pay-per-views in a long time.
Yeah.
But it's baffling to me how great that show was and how bad the TV was 6 weeks later. And
yeah.
I'd have probably tuned out to about the Rumble at that point. I certainly wouldn't have continued out of choice. But no, like, WWE's just part of what WWE's like my version of having a football team. Like, sometimes they're terrible, sometimes they're good, but they're your team. And that's who you like, and that's what... So that's... Would I ever stop? I don't know. Now that I do it as a job as well, like, I managed to make my biggest hobby a job.
So, that's living the dream.
And then you get to do some part of that as well, because, you know, you're freelance here, you can come in and do your stuff, so... But yeah, I guess I'm going to ask you, do you think if you weren't doing the podcast, would you stop watching right now, or is there something in particular they would do that would stop you watching?
I'm a sucker for the Rumble. I would always come back for the Rumble, I think. At this point, obviously I took the decade hiatus, but at this point they would really have to do something. Like, literally the scenario with Roman Reigns coming out and eliminating Daniel Bryan, that would be the last straw. But yeah, periodically I would watch. That's what I would go with, I think. Periodically, I would end up watching for the big shows.
Ali Hussein says, what was the point in Asuka beating Bliss if they just forget about it and never give her a title shot? Just chuck her on the Rumble. We talked about that earlier. They don't want to remind you of that right now. Callum wants to know, do you think that WWE are going to do something big for Balor Club at WrestleMania?
That's a great question.
That is a
really good question. Right now, it's a tug of war. Vince McMahon doesn't like him, and Triple H does. So it depends on who tugs the hardest, or if Triple H decides that is the hill that he wants to die on.
Yeah, it's true. Jared has asked. I think I've forgotten this. I'm looking over it all here. He says, so you survived the show without hitting anyone, but you attacked the American fellow with a chair afterwards. How cool was he? Thanks again. So apparently I hit someone with a chair after Raw. And I don't remember it.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Jared, did I actually hit you with a chair?
No.
I couldn't have hit my chair. No. I mean, it's a padded chair. It's essentially a cuddle with legs. Jesus. Okay, well, hopefully that's going to be evidence now if you sue
me. Don't sue me. I wasn't there. I didn't do anything. I don't even know this man. Who are you?
We'll end it there. Raw was so bad, I attacked a stranger with a chair. As David cackles into his drink.
I love it.
Well, how can you segue into plugs from there? Well... If you want to buy a chair or any other homeware thing, you can go to Amazon through our link at insidetheropes.co.uk/Amazon and pick your city and just our country and order as you normally would, and we get a little bit of a kickback. David, where can people find you on Twitter?
You know what's really actually pretty cool about the Amazon deal and ordering anything? Nicola H. At Hughes87N. She actually ordered a book that I recommended today. So what do you know? Using our Amazon link, so we'll get a little bit of that kickback. How about that? It's real easy. Just bookmark the link, you guys.
Excellent advice. Also, you can go over to Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where you will have Sandra and I just recently did a two-hour podcast on the 1998 Royal Rumble. Great listen. Check that out. All the other usual content. David and I have got some Patreon podcast to do. We've got to watch Extreme Rules 2009. We've got to do one in video games. We're going to get them done before the end of the month. And of course, at the $5, you also get the Power Slam podcast for free every week. Also, the Power Slam Awards of 2017 are up, where Finn and I go through such categories as the Pile of Shit Vince Russo Award.
Don't be a Mac, bro.
God. In fact, apparently Vince Russo was telling Steve Austin in his podcast about how WWE is being ruined by long matches. Yeah, no, that's true. Maybe they should do a pinata and a pole or make a C-list movie star a world champion, you fucking cretin.
We need Judy Bagwell on a forklift.
And by the end of the month, we will be covering the Royal Rumble at the $5 level. Sondra, David, and I get together for the Royal Rumble. That's going to be epic, I'm sure. We'll either be fuming together or happy together, one of the two. David, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to say hi?
You can go and talk about your favorite alternative top 40 tracks from 1997 at Zoopsoul on Twitter. That's Zoopsoul or Zoopsoul. Ain't I great, Kenny? Fuck yeah, because this podcast was great.
It was great. Now, I've just been handed here, apparently, the numbers for Raw last night.
Okay.
Our number one did 4.8 million.
Wow.
Our number two did 4.6, and our number three did 4.1. So, people tuned
in. Good numbers, yeah, for sure.
You can get me on Twitter, KennyMC1985, where somebody tweeted saying, because I'd set a tweet last night saying, that was a terrible show, I had such a bad experience, go and watch New Japan PWG, you guys never seem to be disappointed. And then somebody tweeted me today and said, oh, you're one of those guys that loves the flippy wrestlers. I'm like, do you know me?
My favorite thing was whenever somebody said that you were a New Japan mark. And I'm like, I couldn't even convince that motherfucker. I had to bribe my wife in order to get her to review the New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Oh, bollocks. You knew I was going to do that. Don't you fucking lie.
Just to get him because he didn't want to watch it. Jesus. I'm over here scrubbing the toilets, doing all the houseworks for my wife, trying to make amends with her. Because she's on the Patreon doing all of the Wrestle Kingdom reviews, which are, by the way, available at the Inside the Ropes Patreon. A lot of positive reviews.
Lost point. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to do one with you because you've pretty much now got your new co-host, I guess.
It does seem that way. People are all about it. So we'll see where that goes from here.
Whose music would you like to see us play out or hear us play out for this episode?
It's got to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. You start Raw with Austin, you end the Raw Rundown with Austin.
He came, he saw, he stunned Vince. That's all we needed him to do. And hopefully the WWE going forward for 2018 can look at that segment and apply that to everything going forward of just give the people what they want. We'll be back next week with more. Thank you very much, everybody. Bye-bye.
Take care, everyone.